As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United, and here we go again. After a week where it was beginning to feel a little bit better, we were brought crashing back down to earth by that 1-0 defeat to Crystal Palace. Andy Mitten and Laurie Whitwell are here to reflect on that. We'll look ahead to Galatasaray, and we'll talk about the whole situation for Manchester United and exactly where this season goes from here. But good evening, gentlemen. It's 8:45 on Sunday night. We decided to get this over and done with, so here we are. How are you feeling about it, Laurie?
Yeah, let's rip the plaster off.
Yeah, quite literally. Andy?
Disappointed. Just been a pretty bad weekend, and hopefully this podcast won't be too downbeat. We'll try and raise a smile from somewhere. I'm just not sure where at the moment.
No, it's amazing that you can watch Manchester City get beat by Wolves and Liverpool and all their VAR controversy and a last gasp own goal to lose a game for them can't even cheer you up. That's saying something, isn't it? We were all there at Old Trafford on Saturday. What went wrong, Laurie? In some ways, I think that feels like the worst defeat they've had so far, and they've had quite a few of them, obviously.
Yeah, I think the worst defeat because it felt like there was familiar patterns there about why United had lost. So you could maybe, with other defeats, say that there was a quirk of circumstance, you know, with the Arsenal one, and that was, you know, a hair's width away from being a win, maybe. And then the Spurs one, there was positive moments. And then ultimately, the, you know, change of system by Postecoglou altered the momentum. Sort of similarly with the Brighton one as well. And you kind of think, well, okay, Brighton are actually a really good team. And then they go and get spanked 6-1 by Aston Villa. So even that loss, yeah, on reflection isn't looking as good. Or, you know, is looking worse than it was, rather. The Palace one was just quite deflating because it ended with United out of ideas, really. I mean, I don't know how many ideas they had during the game, to be honest, but it
was part of the issue, yeah, really, wasn't it?
It finished with it being, you know, even worse, I suppose. They could have equalised, they could have maybe nicked it, but I thought Mark Critchley's piece was really accurate about it, actually, in that, you know, he said that last season they won 13 games by a one-goal margin. No team won more games by that sort of, you know, the slenderest of margins. And this was just the flip side of that coin, really, where, you know, United don't really create that many. They certainly don't score that many. You know, their goals record from last season wasn't great, and it's even worse this season. So I think that's probably what the most deflating thing is. It's difficult to see how this turns around anytime soon, just because United basically had, you know, their best players out there in an attacking sense. Okay, Antony and Jadon Sancho, you know, at least one of those will be back fairly soon. Maybe they'll alter the situation a little bit, but it's not like you're waiting on Antony coming back and thinking, right, here's this guy that's been tearing it up on the pitch for many months. So yeah, it felt like a situation that's going to be very tough to remedy.
Andy?
I couldn't find a single Crystal Palace fan outside the away end before the game yesterday who felt their team was going to get a point, let alone a win. And I spoke to several of them, and obviously spoke to Manchester United fans as well. I think people expected a repeat of the midweek win, despite there being more changes. Palace were missing seven players who would have been expected to start if they would have all been fit. I mean, that's really worrying when you hear stuff like that. When Palace went ahead, that was the first time they'd scored in the first half all season. And I don't have that much confidence when Manchester United go behind. I feel that heads drop, tension rises. Part of me is like, it's Manchester United at Old Trafford. It will build and build and it will result in goals. And all it resulted in was more possession. And I spoke to some people who worked for Palace after the game and they were like, on another day, you know, our goal was being bombarded. And I think Onana only made one save from Will Hughes in the second half. It was awful. It was an awful day. The weather was awful. And back to your first point about it feeling like the most disappointing result, I agree with you. You know, losing narrowly at Arsenal, who are a top team, it's going to happen. Tottenham, looking like a top team, but United played very well in the first half there. Brighton, it was like, yep, novelty team at the moment. That statement looks a bit weaker now. They've been battered by Aston Villa. Bayern Munich, one of the best teams in the world. But we're now seven games in and United have lost four of them. This is the worst, highest number of defeats since 89. Got 9 points. Ole Gunnar's team had 9 points at the start of 19-20. And it's not good enough. It's as simple as that. And the manager knows that. I'm bored watching Manchester United. I don't think this is a team which is exciting. I don't think going to the match is particularly enjoyable. I'm not someone who thinks United deserve to win all the time. But as well as hanging under, sitting underneath a big, heavy cloud yesterday of rain, there's still that cloud of the Glazer ownership. And I just feel like it sets the mood on so many things. And it's there all the time. And everything points back to that and to them being in charge. And they can push back and say, a lot of money's been spent on recruitment. And when you lose at home to Palace, the recruitment doesn't look quite so smart. United have had a lot of injuries, absolutely. I know that Erik ten Hag thinks they're not actually playing that badly and they're due a little bit of luck. But I know what I feel when I sit there. And I just feel this is so disappointing, so underwhelming. Partly because it's Manchester United, you expect more. Partly because last season was encouraging and you expect the team to kick on. But is that just wishful thinking? Because you assume that things are going to get better. Now the manager's been in there longer. Now he's brought in more of his players, you know, his own specific striker and goalkeeper. But it's been dire so far this season. There's loads of time for it to change, but four defeats after seven games. You know, this idea that the most optimistic side of me had about pushing City a bit more this year, it seems, you know, completely inaccurate.
You make a really good point in there, Andy. Laurie, who's enjoying themselves at the moment? It just doesn't feel very fun. Doesn't feel like there's much joy with this Manchester United team right now.
I suppose it feels quite workmanlike because it's a pressurised situation. You know, you can have more fun when you are in a good vein of form and you understand where your teammates are going to be and you can kind of be a bit creative and off the cuff. It feels like there's a lot of tension perhaps in United's play and well, you know, from the, I don't know, from maybe Carrington, from the coaching sessions and then into the games and then after the games and you're kind of going around, you know, the players after the game on Saturday, you know, went around and kind of applauded the fans that were still there, but it felt, you know, like it's an obligation, isn't it? It's difficult, you know.
There weren't many left, were there?
Well, that's either. Yeah. You sort of think fair play for the players for still, you know, doing that. And Hoyland, I think, gave his shirt to fans. I mean, he's obviously enjoying probably his too strong a word, maybe, because he just wants to score and do well. But he's clearly reveling in the fact that he's playing for Manchester United.
He's been good. Like I'd struggle to blame him for any of the issues that United have got at the moment. I feel sorry for him that he's not really being given the chances that he needs to score the goals to win games for United. That's the major issue, isn't it? It's the creativity in this team. It's the decision-making, Andy, when it comes to key passes. It's just not there. It's not right, is it?
And the end result is not enough goals are being scored.
Yeah, on the goals. I mean, seven goals from their opening matches. When you look at the rest of the Premier League, unbelievably, there's seven teams that have scored double the number of goals that Manchester United have scored. I mean, Brighton have scored 19 goals so far this season already. But the XG, even in Critch's article that Laurie was referring to before, Andy, I mean, 11.3 is their XG. So that's the number of goals statistically that United would have been expected to have scored 11 so far this season from the quality of the chances they've created. They're just way below that.
United are struggling to break teams down. And we should credit Crystal Palace for the way that they defended yesterday. Roy Hodgson, when you get a record as good as his at Old Trafford, that's not luck. That is intelligent management of the players that you've got. But with respect to Hughes and Doucouré, who both had exceptional games, they are not elite top-end Champions League midfielders. And Manchester United are at home on a big pitch and labouring to break them down yet again. Now, let's forget the cup game. We're seeing trends in most matches now. Manchester United start brightly. Marcus Rashford starts brightly. He cuts in. He bundles his way towards goal. But the end product from Rashford, from Hoyland even, from Palestre, from Fernandes, it's just not there. And that leaves you with the goals tally that Manchester United have got. Hoyland almost prodded United ahead very early on. And there was a very good goal line clearance. Palace had all the luck there. But then, what about United against Wolves? You know, we can argue for and against who's had luck so far this season. The end result is that Manchester United are a mid-table team. And it could only be worse if you're Chelsea, who are even worse than Manchester United. I do think standards are rising across the Premier League. I think competition is tougher. But that is such a weak excuse when you are Manchester United, and Eric Ten Hag's getting a bit of stick, as he will do when his team are underperforming. He said specifically after the game that he would expect that. You would expect to beat Crystal Palace at home. And again, in isolation, you can stomach that. You know, Wolves beat Manchester City at the weekend. But what we're seeing is trends, and that really worries me. We're seeing Anthony Martial come on again, fail to impress, and it just worries me. There's more bad news coming all the time. We've just heard that Lisandro Martinez is going to need another operation. The situation at left back is just becoming a joke. You're bringing in left backs on loan and now they get injured. I felt that Amrabat looked like a very good left back against Palace in the cup and a very bad one against Palace in the league. And there's just a lot of negatives around, and it all filters into the mood. It's a pretty glum place, Old Trafford, at the moment.
Yeah, that's exactly how it felt on Saturday, certainly. I mean, on Amrabat, he should have been sent off, to be honest. He tried grabbing hold of the ball twice in situations where he felt like he had to retrieve it that way. He looked so assured in the cup against Palace, and it was almost the exact opposite. And the free kick, I mean, Laurie, I think, did we joke about the one he gave away with about 15 seconds to go at Burnley in a very similar position?
Yeah.
I mean, he's making his first ever Premier League start. You know, he's at Old Trafford. I'm sure he's trying to make his impact on the game, and that's why maybe the challenge is a little overeager. But like you said before, I think it's just difficult to know how they get out of this. The only way they get out of it is with time and with scoring goals and more creativity and more confidence, and it grows that way. But that's quite hard to see that path forward at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Amrabat in that free kick, and it's obviously, you know, it's not down to him that United then go and concede the goal there, but it's a dangerous area of the pitch, and you've got Jordan Ayew, whose modus operandi is basically get the ball, run with it a bit, slow down, invite the tackle. Not even a tackle, just any kind of presence, and he goes over. Like, he wins free kicks. He's like an absolute expert at it in the Premier League. So, and he did that time and again. And I suppose that's where you've got a new person into the Premier League. He doesn't know how Jordan Ayew plays necessarily. So
he would have been told, though, wouldn't he? Surely.
I don't know. You know, this is kind of the question you want to sort of ask. You know, drill down into really, and ask people: is this the kind of stuff you were discussing before the game, or was it all about being on the ball? And, you know, moving into midfield as you did against Palace in the League Cup and sort of progressing from there. You know, you're sure that Roy Hodgson's a wily operator. He will have seen stuff happen in the Carabao Cup and then decided to tweak things for the league game as much as he could do with the injuries that he's got, you know, as well. You know, Odson Edouard didn't even play for Palace. You know, he's their top scorer this season, and they still won. I think that's the concerning thing, isn't it? That you're up against a team that is fine. You know, it's not a great team. It's not necessarily a team that's going to go and beat other teams away from home like this.
No, and the other thing, yes, Palace were rigid, they were organised, they were disciplined, they were all the things that you'd need to be when you're setting up in a low block at Old Trafford, but it didn't even feel like they'd played that well, in a way. Maybe I'm sort of not giving them enough credit for that, but you know, it was just watching the same pattern of play, Andy, really, wasn't it? And United just trying to find different ways. It just doesn't, I don't know, to me it felt a lot like the start of the season with Mason Mount coming back, that midfield not quite working. And I'm not putting it on Mason Mount, because actually I thought, certainly in the first half, he was looking as likely as anyone to produce that little bit of interplay or that little bit of movement to provide the breakthrough. But it's just not working, is it, that midfield, I don't think?
I think we saw a regression from Casemiro after a couple of decent games. And that is worrying, because I sensed that he was coming back into form, but some of his passing was very good and some of it was absolutely atrocious. Palace did exactly what they needed to do and they rode the luck, of course they did, but for them to win away at Old Trafford was a huge result for them. And I mentioned Doucouré and Hughes. All they did was sit in front of a flat back four and soak up all Manchester United's pressure. And again, they're not the best midfielders in the world. So what's going to happen when Manchester United come up against even stronger teams? I thought the efforts were raised a little bit in the second half after a terrible first half. I mean, it just took me back to that Van Gaal nonsense. It was that bad. I'm not getting fully on Erik ten Hag's case, because if you ask me now, I think United fans should get fully behind him. I think he's a good manager. He's having a rough spell at the moment. He'll have other rough spells at the moment. People talk back to 89. Well, that was Sir Alex Ferguson in charge. So, feels disappointing at the moment. There's lots of games coming up, so he can turn things round pretty quickly. You've got Galatasaray. I'm looking at Brentford and going, whoa, because they're not a bad side, although the record at Old Trafford is pretty poor. But I'm worried about so many individuals. Palestre's had, he's had good minutes now, and he's done all right. But you need to do better than doing all right when you're playing for Manchester United. You need to be scoring goals. You need to be making game-changing moves, match-winning moves.
I think that's confirmed, hasn't it, with Palestri, what we all suspected. Yeah. But it was we felt like we needed to see him start a couple of games. And maybe we're writing off too soon. But I think it's been 3 years, hasn't it, at United, and you've had multiple managers that have kind of been thinking this way. And he's made an impact off the bench. And maybe that's his role, off the bench. And providing that kind of last 10 minutes of energy, because to, as you say, to get break down a team like that, he dribbles with the ball quite well, but then doesn't really go anywhere with it, and that's an issue when you're playing for Man United.
Yeah, it was his first ever Premier League start, that, nearly 3 years to the day since joining. Again, it's that position. There's a question mark over. We understand that Anthony now will return to training for Manchester United. So, we'll see when...
Yeah, he's training today again.
Yeah, we'll see when he is he's ready to play again. Just before we move it on then, Martinez, Laurie, what's the details on this exactly?
Yeah, it's an interesting one that we might need to sort of drill down a little bit more into as the days go on, just because it's an operation on that broken metatarsal, back in April that he did against Sevilla. He had a surgery on it at the time and it looked like it had sorted itself out, and obviously he came back in pre-season, but you could tell that something wasn't quite right. It wasn't quite playing at the same intensity. And I think for the games against Bayern Munich and Brighton, it already kind of had an impact there, taking painkilling to play on that one. But he wasn't right. And yeah, the diagnosis now is that he's going to need another operation on it. So the time frame for him being out, looking at the same kind of period as originally, which was it was 3 months from when he did the injury to then when he played for United in pre-season. So I think you're looking at a similar kind of time frame there, maybe a little bit sooner if it goes well. But then again, it's the same injury, so you don't want to rush it back and cause it to happen again. So yeah, I mean, that's a really concerning development. United have got, at least they've got, Varane, Lindelof, Maguire, Evans. They have got four centre-backs, but it's not a... Martinez was the kind of... was the player that Ten Hag brought in to really impact how they could progress the ball from deep. And particularly with Onana, you sort of thought that could be a blossoming relationship from, their time at Ajax again. But the fact that he's going to be out for several weeks now is just adds to that sense of... how will Ten Hag turn this around? I did wonder, actually, as we're getting into the later substitutions, and he's taking on So he's taking off Marcus Rashford, putting on Anthony Martial, putting on Donny van de Beek, putting on Harry Maguire to try and change things around. It's like, this is where we've got to already at this stage in the season. And Carl put in that brilliant clip of you with your hood up in the Manchester rainy and sort of sat behind, kind of, and your face said it all. I just wonder, what were you thinking at that moment?
I have no idea, but it looks like the most miserable video of myself that I think I've ever seen. Yeah, it was actually one of our listeners in Norway, Trauma Trolls, one of our listeners in Norway, it was actually who sent us that video on Instagram, and I reposted it on my stories. I've never had so many people laughing at one of my stories before. Everyone thought it was hilarious. Even Manchester United fans, I guess we've got to cheer ourselves up somehow.
You look like that guy out of Star Wars, the one with the hood.
Yeah.
Is it Darth Sidious or whatever he's called? Darth. I'm just Googling it now.
You look like, remember at Everton about a month before David Moyes lost his job, or about a week, Reaper. The Grim Reaper. I thought you were going to bring out a massive scythe and start walking down. I'd be like, there's Ian off the telly. Well, he's not on it. He's definitely on the telly now.
You were all of us at that moment, dear. Ian.
Yeah, I think it just encompassed an emotion, didn't it, really, that video.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, one positive note for Manchester United was a late turnaround at Villa Park for the women's side in their first game in the WSL. Aston Villa had Kirsty Hansen sent off on 74 minutes, a former Manchester United player, of course, and then Rachel Daly scored for Villa just 2 minutes after that. 12,500 fans inside Villa Park. It was the biggest attendance ever for a WSL game for Aston Villa. And they sat there and watched Lucia Garcia equalise just 3 minutes later. And then in stoppage time, the way it should be for Manchester United, Rachel Williams playing in her 13th season in the WSL. She's played in every single year of it. 35-year-old veteran striker looping a header into the far corner. And a great line actually from post-match as well, that she's going to return to being a plasterer after she'd finished playing, because she reckons that she's a better plasterer than she is a footballer. But she looked a mighty fine footballer with that header to win it for Manchester United. And Lucia Garcia revealed after the game as well that the team had put everything into it.
There were some dramatic moments during that game. How physically tough was it out there?
I mean, I'm so fucking tired. I mean, it was a tough match. We fight and yeah.
Yeah, I love it when that happens.
Really fucking tired, isn't that what we all are for United right now?
Yeah, the men's senior team aren't bringing it at the moment, that's for sure. Let's preview their next game then, which is Galatasaray on Tuesday. The Champions League back at Old Trafford after a while. And it's a must-win game. Simple as that, isn't it, Laurie? Whichever way you look at it, to lift the mood, to improve the picture in the group, to ensure that Manchester United are going to still be in the Champions League next year, it's a must-win, isn't it?
Yeah, huge. The way that Galatasaray played in their first game against Copenhagen as well. You know, United should get opportunities and they just have to win their home games against Galatasaray and Copenhagen, you know, possibly even, you know, against Bayern Munich, depending on how things go away. As Andy's already said, you know, United have never won in Copenhagen or Galatasaray. So, yeah, it's just absolutely essential. And just to kind of, as you say, just change the feeling around the place. One win isn't going to do that. You know, it's not going to happen overnight, but I think another draw or defeat would really crank up the pressure. United should be beating Galatasaray. It's as simple as that. I know they've been, you know, out of the Champions League last season, but these are the kind of matches that United have to be winning. And I, you know, you never know. There might be a switch that flicks because it's a different competition and different atmosphere, different mood around at night. You'd hope that a few of the players would look at the crowd and, you know, sense that kind of atmosphere and expectation and be invigorated by it and really want to go and show what they're made of. But yeah, it's an absolute must win.
Something needs to click, doesn't it, Andy? Definitely. I mean, whatever game it is, whatever competition, something needs to click, please.
Yeah, it does. And a top, supposedly top Premier League team should be beating a Turkish team. But I thought that when Manchester United and Galatasaray first played each other in 1993 and United surged ahead and Galatasaray came back, it was a free all. Alex Ferguson just said in the press conference after, "I'm in shock." And I've written a huge piece about those games in 1993 because there was a lot of trouble there. The current Galatasaray, they won the league by 8 points last year. Their supporters are fantastic in terms of how loud they are. We're going to see that in Istanbul. We'll probably see it at Old Trafford. They always come, make an absolute racket. In a way which I quite like the fan culture around Turkish football. They've got some big names. People like Wilfried Zaha played at the weekend, the top of the Turkish league again. Icardi's there. And Musiera, the goalkeeper, Hakim Ziyech is there as well. Dries Mertens, although he's not been playing all the time. They had to come through three different qualifying rounds just to get into the Champions League group stage. So one of the teams he knocked out was Molde, who Ole Gunnar Solskjaer used to manage. They beat a Lithuanian team as well. They beat a Slovenian team too. It's pretty normal for Turkish teams to have to come through some qualifying rounds. But as Laurie says, it is an absolute must win. It was probably a good result that they only drew with Copenhagen in that first game. So United need to be winning these home matches and to not get out of this group, you know, with respect to Copenhagen, who are probably the biggest club in Scandinavia, certainly the best supported club. Galatasaray, the biggest club in Turkey with respect to Fenerbahce, Besiktas, etc. United should really be getting out of this group. It's the first time they've played since 2012. I'll make you smile, right? When United played there in 2012, match day six, right? United had qualified quite easily because that's what the team did then. And afterwards, a local journalist said, "Mr. Ferguson," and he had all his local journals with him. He said, "You left here in 1993 disappointed, and now you're here, you leave disappointed again. Has anything changed in 19 years? And Ferguson, he didn't snap back at him. He just smiled and said, "Yeah, well, we've been champions of Europe twice." And then he smiled, but he wasn't finished. He said, "Oh, we've also reached the final twice and we've also qualified for the knockout stages as group winners tonight. Yourselves?" And he just smiled, stood up and walked out the room. And it was just the most polite, fantastic put down to a journalist who tried to be smart with him.
Yeah, and have a bit of like courage because he's got all his friends around him in his own backyard. What about changes to the team then, Laurie? Do you see many? Do you think people should have question marks about the starting spots, considering the run of form that United are on?
I mean, I'm getting sort of friends telling me that, you know, Marcus Rashford needs to be dropped and Bruno Fernandes needs to be dropped, and they would be two huge calls. I mean, I wasn't surprised, I suppose, because Rashford wasn't having the most effective game against Palace, but he was still brought off with 30 minutes to go, and United needed goals, and he was last season United's most lethal, probably only kind of reliable goal scorer that you had, with Fernandes having a little bit of a dip in that front. I suppose that just speaks to Ten Hag feeling like it wasn't working for him. So, I mean, he's not going to drop him from the start. There's just no way. I mean, because the alternative is bring Garnacho in on the left. And I think, again, he's a player that really does have his best moments when he's been brought on as a substitute. And I think he was quite lively, wasn't he, against Palace?
I'm not sure Ten Hag trusts him enough to start him in this situation, really. Especially ahead of Rashford.
No, I mean, we had this situation again where the crowd were singing his name. He's obviously very popular, and he enjoys it. He gave them an applause backwards. But I think Ten Hag is resistant, I suppose, to throwing him in sort of with that faith element to it. I think he wants to put him in when he knows what he's going to get from him. I mean, could you start Mason Mount on the right? Bruno is as number 10 still. And because I thought Mount was actually pretty good. I know you said about the first half. I thought even in the second half, he had some decent moments. And it was that tackle that triggered the ball for Garnacho that then he sort of dribbled it into that same kind of space as Rashford had done against Brighton, and the ball nearly trickled in again, a couple of deflections. So, you know, and that's one of the aspects that you want from a Ten Hag team, where you've got these players high energy in the final third. Okay, they've lost the ball, but they're winning it back straight away, and they're kind
presumably that's what Mount was bought for, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I wonder if he starts on the right. I mean, I know you touched on Antony earlier. He's trained Saturday, he's trained, you know, today, Sunday. I'm sure he'll train again on Monday with his open training session for the first 15 minutes to the media at midday on Monday. So you'll be able to see, you know, a little bit there. And I would be surprised if he's not included in the squad. I think Ten Hag will be looking to get him, you know, included as soon as possible, because he does know what he's going to get from him. But I think maybe that's the one tweak you could make, where you have maybe Mount on the right and you know, sort of alter the midfield a little bit.
Yeah, we should point out at this point that the investigations are still ongoing into Antony. Of course, he's facing allegations of assault, allegations which he denied. You can read more about that on The Athletic. Just going back to Marcus Rashford, Andy, Laurie said there that he's got people telling him that they think that Rashford should be dropped. I mean, he certainly seems to be having a bit of a crisis of confidence in his own decision-making. It seems like the more he tries to take the right choice, it just becomes more wrong in a way at the moment.
I think he's starting games well. You see him looking up for it and running at players, but he's bumbling through them. He scored one goal in 8 games, Ian, and that is a poor return. And Laurie's saying, talking to his friends, and I was talking to fans outside the ground yesterday, and some of them were very critical of Marcus Rashford. Maybe it's because people are harder on their own. Maybe it's because
I was going to say, why do you think he's getting it more than other players? Because he does seem to be a focus of it. Even the groans inside the stadium seem to be only safe for Marcus Rashford. And it's not like he's the only one who's not finding top form. In fact, you know, I talked about it on the pod a couple of weeks ago, interviewing him. You can see he's carrying Manchester United's problems on his shoulders like we would. You know, I don't think there's anyone who carries it more than him. Why do you think he is getting this much stick?
Because of his wages, because people think he should be the best player, because you measure strikers or forwards by how many goals they do or don't score, because there could be a perception that when he needs to earn a new contract, his form tends to pick up, and when he signs one, his form tends to drop off. A few people mentioned your interview with him to me. They'd actually made a good point that when he looks up to pass to people, there isn't a huge array of options there. And I think that is a fair point.
Definitely.
And we can talk about who's going to play, what system, etc. I think whoever plays, United have just got someone has got to click back into place, you know, collectively. It's just not been happening. We're seeing 5, 6, 7 players struggling in every game. And ironically, in 1994, United needed a good win in Europe, and a team called Galatasaray came to Old Trafford. But it was already too late because the team had failed earlier on in the group stage. And a lad called David Beckham was given a chance. I don't know what he went on to do. Him and a lad called Simon Davis, who I used to play against when I was a young footballer, he was like one of the best free players in my league. And he played, and United beat Galatasaray 4-0. And even though it was a dead rubber game, it was quite a famous game as well. And I think United need that again. I think United need to play well. A bit like against Palace in the Cup last week.
Yeah. Just, you thought that was a remedy, really, didn't you? That feel-good sort of element and the control and the ease in which they seem to win the game. They need to get in front, Andy, don't they?
Yeah. Like,
to me, the first goal is obviously always important in football. It's one of the oldest clichés. But it feels like this Manchester United team in particular, for their confidence and belief, need to get in front. But also for the transition that Erik ten Hag is working towards to fully work as well. It feels like they need to have their noses in front to pull the other team out to then play to United's strength.
You say confidence, and I think it's a big factor. When this team go behind, their heads drop. Can see the way that the team style changes. Before the goal yesterday, you saw Casemiro dropping right back between the two central defenders. This was what was being worked on in training. It's a very Dutch thing. It's a very Ten Hag way of playing football. And it's harder to do that when you're behind. It's all right saying you're going to be patient. At some point, you are bringing on Anthony Martial and Donny van de Beek and Harry Maguire because you're panicking, because you're about to lose at home to Crystal Palace. And unfortunately, if Galatasaray went ahead, the mood will just sink again. It really will. Mm. The patience is thinning. With individuals, you mentioned Marcus Rashford. And with the manager, which is natural. Any football manager would... is right to be critiqued when they don't do well. I still think if you asked United fans now, would you back the manager? I think 90% would say yes. I really feel that there's a lot of strong support for him and even some sympathy because he's having to do this under the Glazers. He's not getting his the signings he really wants. The player he really wanted more than anybody else was Harry Kane. And in years gone by, I think Manchester United would have made a better fist of getting Harry Kane. Maybe when financial fair play wasn't as prevalent and the Glazers weren't around as much, but he's dealing with his second best option. So we're relying on a 20-year-old lad who looks very talented and is looking good, but he's still not Harry Kane, is he? And if Harry Kane would have played against Crystal Palace at the weekend, it's all ifs and buts, but you do sense one of them chances would have been put away.
Do you know another player I think United are missing? Oh, well, they can't really miss Harry Kane because they never had him, but a player I think United are missing, Laurie, in these particular matches as well is Luke Shaw. He had such an impact from left back, breaking down teams and creating opportunities. And do we know when he's going to be back? Because obviously he'd be straight back in the team, wouldn't he? No question, at left centre half or left back.
Yeah, I think the original prognosis was about 3 months. So are we, a month into that? 5 weeks into that?
Is that all?
Yeah. So we're not close to him coming back, I don't think. You know, it's still working his way to full recovery. And I think maybe that's, you could possibly bracket that into Rashford's form, because him and Rashford had such a good understanding, underlapping, overlapping. You'd think it must be difficult for Rashford to play on the left when you've then got, how many different left backs has he played in front of? And I'm not saying that should absolve him of criticism, but I think it maybe is a reason. If you're not being able to rely on someone going past you on the overlap, then you can cut in and do those shots whilst the defender's kind of distracted. So I think that's one aspect. One thing on the Rashford and Højlund sort of relationship, which is something that I think is clearly crucial to United, switching out of this form. He was the one, wasn't he, that played that kind of long ball over the top for Højlund's chance in the first half, which he then tried to do again later on in the first half. I think it didn't quite come off, but that's clearly something that they're looking at, where you've got Rashford on the left and he can probably sweep that ball for Højlund to chase onto. It's probably not the most sophisticated of attacking plans, but it is something I think you can see that they're looking to try and do. I think Shaw is a miss. I mean, these injuries, it's a lot. For United to deal with it. I did a little piece before the game where I kind of tried to reflect on some of the reasons for that. I mean, you look at the US tour, United did travel an awful lot of air miles in the summer. They've also played more games last season than any other team in Europe. So is this a kind of an element of that, just kind of chickens coming home to roost almost and in a way inevitable? I would always sort of perhaps argue that you could foresee some injuries coming, if a player's in the red zone or whatever, and I'm sure that United are trying to look to that. But then if needs must in certain games and you're kind of asking a player, can you get out there and do it for me, and they're saying yeah, no, I want to help, then maybe that's how the injuries happen sometimes. But it is a lot to contend with. But what else can they do? What do you think? Yeah, what do you think, Ian? Can they tweak midfield?
I think they could. I think they could introduce Christian Eriksen for this game. I think the general feel of the Champions League ties, and particularly at home, they're often slower matches, more patient build-up is required. They need players to be able to change the pace of some of Manchester United's build-up as well. It felt very one-paced and predictable at times against Crystal Palace. I don't think Eriksen's been brilliant so far this season, but at least he's got a sense of that conductor, you know, that metronome, as people refer to some of the midfield players, to be able to slow it down and speed it up. And, you know, they need to improve the service into Højlund as well, one way or another. Bruno Fernandes, I think, was Manchester United's most creative player in that sense at the weekend, but I don't think he had a particularly good game either. And like you were saying before, you know, there's some question marks about him at the moment. Something needs to change, definitely. I'm not sure exactly what it is, and I don't think we've cheered anyone up or provided many answers to anyone listening to this podcast either, but we're going to leave it there. Laurie and Andy, thank you so much for sitting with us on a Sunday night. I feel like across Zoom, we've all been holding hands and supporting each other every syllable of this podcast. It does feel a bit like a support group again, doesn't it? But yeah, thank you for being with us. Thank you for listening at home as well. Remember, if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic and you want to read any of the articles that we've talked about on this podcast, Andy's got a fantastic one coming up about Manchester United's battles with Galatasaray down the years. You know what to do. Go and get yourself a subscription. You can sign up at theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. It's £1 or $1 a month for the first 12 months. But for the moment, thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next one. Let's hope it's not going to be one of these again. Bye-bye. The Athletic.